Hi, Charles on. Anybody else?
Hi, I'm Olin.
Hey, Olin, welcome. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Okay.
What's the weather like there?
Actually, today it's been a very pretty day. Yesterday was stormy basically all day long. Today is a nice day.
Okay. And likewise it is here as well. So it's nice to have summer finally coming.
Oh, well. I just as soon stick with late spring. Thank you. thank you very much for sending that latest bit of information. And the unfortunate piece of it. The way you sent it, it was a reply all, I'm sure. And all it went to was the Apex Board of Directors, who I put as a carbon copy.
Okay.
And I had had all the full members as blind carbon copies. So go to them.
Okay.
So I have been spending the last 5 minutes or so desperately trying to get it out to them, and I don't know if I've succeeded or not. So just be aware
that enough.
It may or may not have made it to everybody you intended to.
Well, it was certainly neat to see Super at a ride. What a horse, to say the least. I can see how Stags got so fond of him.
Yes, he has personality in the extreme.
Yes,
and very opinionated, and he enjoys the sport, and as I've always said, he shows himself.
And I was delighted to be able to the Old Dominion. What a ride. I bet you add another 10 degrees of heat, some more humidity to that. That just must be extraordinarily difficult.
Yes. Last year was a very different event than this year. Last year it has to have been at least 10 degrees warmer.
Wow.
And, the conditions you're specifying, the additional heat, additional humidity, it was pretty awesomely poor.
Good turnout, 500 milers.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just looking at how Fort Howes went, and they were less than 20. So it's nice that the Northeast crowd came in great numbers, and it was a wonderful ride. I was delighted to be there.
Yeah.
A little challenging driving out in the dark, not knowing where to go to get to the ride site.
That's what makes it fun. The fact that you've got all the vet checks away is part of what makes for a very, very interesting ride. Did you get to see any of the away vet checks?
Excuse me?
I forgot. Did you get to see any of the away vet checks?
I did. They were kind enough to push me out to two sets of them. And I actually ended up spending like 6 hours at one. I think it was 92 or something like that.
Oh, big 92? Okay, that's right. You were there. Anyhow, who joined?
Rick Waysmith.
Hey, Rick. How are you doing?
Pretty good.
Hi, Rick. Olin Balch here.
Oh, hi.
I don't think, have we met before? Have we met at a ride?
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, hopefully sometime in the future.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Well, Cheryl, from your standpoint, a point-to-point 100-mile ride or even a 50-mile ride is challenging in terms of getting all this stuff together. And you do it as a cavalry ride, that must be even more so. But do you think it's easier for the horse to be out, so to speak, all day as opposed to coming back and forth to camp?
That's an interesting question. I know Stag is very definitely opinionated that it's a lot easier for the horse to just be out all day rather than coming back to camp and then having to leave camp continuously. He has maybe brainwashed me over the years or whatever, but I tend to agree with him that the long loop trails or almost the long lollipops
Yes.
Which is what the Old Dominion fundamentally is, where the horse goes out and is away from home all day, but knows he's coming home. That knowing you're, I think really the knowing you're coming home makes a lot of difference in the brightness of the horse and their happiness and all the rest of it. But the going away and having an adventure together is sort of a bit of a high for both the horses and the riders.
Mm.
Rick, have you ever done a big loop trail yourself or like the Old Dominion rather than having the stuff come to camp?
No, I've never. The closest I've come was a 25-mile loop.
Right.
Like that.
And it's an interesting set of circumstances there. I know the Fitz ride in Florida this last March, the 100, we had one long leg down to an away check, a loop back to that away check, and then a long leg coming back to the base camp. And the horses seem to like that. And then, actually, my horse is just a nice cooperative beast anyhow, so it's hard to, hard to judge. But that seems to be something that they can relate to. Anyhow, one of the things about these calls is it's frequent that we don't have people identifying themselves. They come on in stealth mode. And rather than just doing a chit-chat at this stage, I think we probably ought to sort of dive in. And Olin, I know that you've written the article in Endurance News and whatever, but and you also sent your email earlier this evening. And, Rick, I forwarded it on, I hope. If you don't get an email from me that's forwarding something from Olin, shoot back an email at me tomorrow morning if you would, and I'll make sure that I resend it out to everybody.
Yeah, I have received it.
Oh, you have. That's good. It's always a little bit of a crapshoot when I do it the way I was doing it tonight.
Rick, by any chance, is your last name White?
No, Weissner, Weissner.
Okay. All right, fair enough.
And Rick is in Illinois?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
I'm happy to kick off if you'd like.
If you would, please.
Okay. Please stop me if and ask questions at the point where anyone would like. This has been an interesting evolution in my thoughts about gastric ulcers in endurance horses, and a couple of issues come to mind very quickly. One is that we're probably using terms ulcers where we ought to be using the term erosions in a lot of instances. We do know that we can have fatal events occur in foals with perforations due to ulcers. We can see peptic ulcers in people causing perforations as well. We don't tend to have those catastrophic events in adult horses. More likely what we're seeing are continual epithelial turnover, a renewal of tissue, erosions, and the more I understand about it, the more it seems to be really a part of the horse's normal physiology. The challenging thing is to decide if the extremes of it are associated with clinical conditions that you're seeing a horse and hence justify treatment. It's quite interesting because clearly Muriel has a product, omeprazole, our ulcer guard, gastric guard, which is FDA approved, very effective in managing it. And if you simply looked at the raw data from the endoscopic studies, which is the gold standard, we could be using that product that Muriel has a lock on most of the horses in the world. And I think that when you have most horses having a similar issue going on, it starts to wonder whether that's not normal physiology to a certain extent as opposed to pathology. I think from our standpoint as people involved in endurance riding, the challenge is deciding whether you have clinical signs which are consistent with ulcers, and if those ulcers then are present, doing the gold standard test, and that's looking in the stomach after a fast with a scope. But the signs are pretty nonspecific. Horses that aren't happy, aren't eating well, show mild and maybe severe colic sometimes, poor doers. So there can be dozens of reasons that would cause those other than an issue associated with the lining of the stomach. So the problem is that while we can see in a lot of instances what people tend to think are ulcers, and remember too that endoscopically what you see, it's hard to tell how deep those erosions really are, how serious they are. Do they need to be treated? And the critical question that I would always ask, are there reasonable clinical signs accompanying those issues that would tell you that you need to go ahead and consider treating that horse? Do we want to take a moment and talk about what I've just brought up?
Rick, do you want to?
Sure, that'd be fine.
I sort of want to pursue this, too, because you've thrown out a bunch of things that I find intuitively appealing, let's put it that way, but also somewhat counter to some of the things that have been presented, let's just say, in other contexts. Don Newton, I guess, who you may or may not have met.
Yes.
But in any case,
he's a pathologist.
Yes, exactly. And pathologist from NC State, I think. Anyhow, he had talked to Stag and I a bit about gastric ulcers and basically said that, in his view, they are normal physiology, and that the stomach lining is part of the equine tissue that heals most readily. Yes, it gets issues, but at the same time, it also heals quickly, and you give the horse something in their stomach and as consistently as you can, and it's amazing how well they manage almost. And so is it something to worry about, and are the signs that you're talking about, like the horse unhappy, not eating well, getting the occasional mild severe colic, which to me is almost, that's something that I would regard as, that might trigger me. But the unhappy, not eating well, poor doer, there are so many other things that lead into those types of behaviors.
Cheryl, I would agree with you and Don. I think that they are these constant changes in the epithelium, erosions, ulcers, are very likely normal physiology. And the challenge is all these non-specific signs, can you rule out other issues? Does this horse have a problem in its mouth associated with its bit that's causing it not want to eat? I mean, there's so much to look at before you say, okay, we've ruled out this, and we should consider now, do we have a stomach problem? What is quite interesting, if we look just at endurance horses and what we know about those and ulcers, there's been three studies that are of interest, one done in California, one done by a past president of the AERC, Barney Fleming, where he scoped a number of horses, and then a study done on FEI horses in Europe just a year ago. And while clearly there is a trend for those horses who are competing to have more, quote, ulcers and more severe ulcers than those during intra-season, nobody's ever looked at, did that have an effect on completion rates? did it have effect on placing? So there's some really obvious questions that you kind of scratch your head and say, all right, so you scoped a bunch of horses after a ride and you saw stuff. How did it affect these horses? Did they do well? Did they not do well? And fundamentally, we don't have answers to those questions. I mean, I'd be much more excited about talking about ulcers as a real issue in horses if, in fact, we were able to say, hey, the more severe the ulcers, the less off these horses completed, the further down in placement they were. But that data isn't available.
Yeah, I'm mentally going back to, okay, I can understand that that's, in some senses, the, you know, okay, what's our bottom line, if you will, and will the horses do? Independent, you know, it's like, okay, are they competing with ulcers? If they're competing with ulcers, how well do they do? And does that really have any correlation to where they place or whatever? Maybe they do better if they've got ulcers. Who knows?
Well, that becomes a, you know, a really interesting question. And in fact, we did try with Barney Fleming's horses, because most of those were AARC, to go back and look at the ride histories and what they were doing. And we haven't quite finished the data analysis. But no one's done that correlation to make the argument that, yes, the presence of the ulcer is causing horses not to complete. It's, you know, that data, no one's done it, so we don't know.
Yikes. Well, there's, you can almost take it as a, let's just propose as a hypothesis that there is a correlation with non-completion and the presence of ulcers.
Okay.
At this stage, it's unproven, but there is at least a, I won't say a full-bore case, but a concept that I think makes some degree of sense. That would go in that direction. So, okay, you've got a horse that's possibly, quote-unquote, not living up to its potential. And you get it scoped, and yes, indeed, it has ulcers. A lot of horses have ulcers, as we've just discussed, and a lot of horses compete with ulcers, and they compete pretty well with ulcers. And do you know of any, you know, this is looking for the anecdotal as opposed to the scientific type of a thing, any cases where horses that have been, quote-unquote, underperforming, diagnosed with ulcers, treated for ulcers, rid of ulcers, presumably, and then come back for a strong endurance career? Or is that, you know, too much of a linear study that, and we haven't got that yet?
Yeah. I don't anecdotally know if someone has come to me and said, gosh, we went ahead and systematically treated with Omeprazole for these horses, and boom, he did better after we did that and stayed better. I guess there's no question in my mind that if you're willing to fork up $1,000 worth of Gastroguard for a month, you're going to clear up ulcers if they do exist. And the data is very good in terms of that product being effective. There's other products that you can use are less effective and have to use more frequently, but will also help the issue of ulcers. But the Omeprazole is really the core drug if you want to deal with healing those lesions.
Before we get off this, Rick, do you know of any horses with ulcers that, period, let's just say, who are in endurance?
No, I don't. The question I'd have is, like, isn't this the lower, I presume this stuff is supposed to lower the acid in the stomach. And in humans, I've heard that by doing that, you don't digest your food as well and thus doesn't get the nutrients as well. Is that what would happen with the gastric guard?
Cheryl, can you repeat that? I didn't quite hear all of it.
I think the general, and Rick, correct me if I'm misstating this. Okay, you've got horses, and we've heard in humans that if you are using the human form of omeprazole, I forget what it's called, but if you use that, yes, indeed, it does kill the stomach acid, but your food doesn't get digested as well. Would that same effect happen with horses so that, in effect, a lot of the nutrients that you're trying to get into them during the course of an endurance race might get lost?
First of all, I would be very hesitant about using a non-equine formulation of omeprazole on horses.
No. This is in humans, whatever it is, the little blue pill. I forget what it's called, but...
We clearly know that if we inhibit these protein pump inhibitors using omeprazole, that we start blocking calcium and magnesium uptake. And we get very concerned that over a long period of time doing it, that we may in fact affect the integrity of the bony system. In women, the omeprazole, we see higher levels of fractures. And we really don't know. FDA, when it tests omeprazole, it does a 30-day trial. It doesn't look at months and months of use. And I think there is a very legitimate concern on many veterinarian standpoints that if we use this product for literally months and months at a time, we could be not affecting nutrients, but electrolytes, magnesium, and calcium being absorbed.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like we have some more people online.
Not sure. Assume no. At the same time, it's hard to judge.
So the bottom line is the jury is out in terms of the safety of omeprazole as a long-term drug for horse use. We really don't know for sure what it's going to do. If we think in terms of a particular ride coming up, and doing, say, a 100-mile ride like the OD that you did 10 days ago. Clearly, with the rules that we do have in the AARC, you could treat till 24 hours before the ride. Going, if you have a fairly normal horse in terms of the stomach and have treated, and this is healthy, going off for that 24 hours and competing without that should have no effect in the terms of developing an ulcer. That isn't enough of a time period. So the current rules the AARC does have, which are different, as everybody knows, from the FEI, where we have that, we block that little window and say, please don't use this product. If you have a healthy stomach, you're not going to get in trouble by not having access to it for that period of time.
If I were sitting there with a horse, again, that has had ulcers, and wanted to manage this going forward, it would seem to me that there are a couple of avenues to explore. In some senses, the who cares about the cost? I'm going to do the darndest that I can to make sure that this horse competes well, is to basically use UltraGuard or something of that nature pretty much to within 24 hours of the competition, take them off and let them run, literally, and then afterwards put them back on. If I want to be more cost-conscious / I don't want to treat the horse when the horse doesn't need to be treated, because after all, he may not have ulcers anymore. I've gotten rid of them. I've proven that I've gotten rid of them, at least at some level. And what are the best other measures that you can use in effect to prevent the occurrence or recurrence of ulcers?
Clearly, we've got some big chemical guns, but let's not miss out on the simple things to do. We know that a protective factor is feeding alfalfa hay, particularly during a ride. Constantly allowing that horse to graze during the ride. If you have a long trailer trip to a ride, making sure that horse has access to feed on a regular basis and browses. There is some questions about whether corn oil is beneficial. There's questions about some grain diets. We have different scientific conclusions on some small studies. But the upshot of it, letting the horse be a horse most of the time, making sure it has food in front of it, really will help minimize that tendency for stress to cause. And essentially, the horse's GI tract is always producing acid. If we don't have food to buffer that, to stimulate bicarbonate, then we tend to get the conditions which predispose. So some of these simple things to do, horses next to their buddies, having a few days once they come to a ride to adjust, feeding alfalfa hay. I've often wondered if, in fact, during long rides, whether it'd be useful to have longer breaks to give these horses more of a chance to feed and fill their stomachs up. So I think the issues of management, feed management, are likely as important or more important than what we can do with chemicals.
Are there, for the want of a better term, natural solutions, semi-holistic types of things that could be fed, like the alfalfa hay, but other things as well, to just be proactive about keeping the GI tract healthy?
Well, the hay comes to my mind pretty darn quick. There are some things, for example, if we're giving, and this is true for humans as well, if we're giving non-steroidals, bute, horses, ibuprofen for us, enough of it, we can certainly get stomach irritation. I would wonder, I'm sorry?
No, go ahead.
Okay. So high roughage diets, with horses chewing for hours, producing a constant flow of salivary bicarbonate into the stomach, is probably the key to try to keep that acidity from rising and causing the issues in that. Now, in terms of other products other than alfalfa hay and good browse, nothing jumps to my mind.
Okay. I have seen, among other things, but this is one that we have actually used in the past, and we've gotten away from it, a natural plan stomach soother or something like that, Aya juice.
Huh, okay.
And I don't know if it does any good at all. It's a classic case of treating a problem that doesn't exist.
Sure.
And
do you know if there's any science behind that, or is it just pretty much anecdotal?
I think it's anecdotal.
You know, on the other extreme, we do, Todd Holbrook of Oklahoma State University took standing horses and fed them electrolyte solutions that we are to be used and was recommended for horses endurance rides, and was able to show gastric irritation just based on the amount of magnesium oxide that was in that particular supplement. So you kind of scratch your head and wonder, while at one point we need the electrolytes to help balance what's being lost during the ride, apparently at least Todd's information would suggest, again, these were standing horses. They weren't doing anything. They were just literally being fed on an hour rate. They did show gastric irritation. Could we be getting into trouble by giving too much electrolytes, causing some low-grade stomach irritation? Some food for thought.
Don't like that one. Okay. I don't know that we even started at the top of the agenda in some senses. And I almost want to revert to that, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Is there a definition of gastric ulcers? I mean, we started off with erosions versus ulcers, and it's like, okay, what are gastric ulcers? And
well, the gold standard is what you see using an endoscope, that after you have removed food from stomach for maybe 12 or 24 hours, so you can get a good scoping of that, and the changes in the epithelium, there's a scoring fashion that's presently being used. What I think tends to be quite interesting is that apparently the depth of the ulcer is hard to judge via the endoscope, but you're looking at epithelial changes that you can easily visualize.
And so these are, to try to counterphrase what you just said, an ulcer would be a change in the epithelium of the upper lining of the stomach, and
an erosion, they would be quite bright red. In some cases, they could even be bleeding if they were severe enough. We do know that we have a natural physiology and a turnover of that stomach, so the very presence of ulcers may not be as pathological as people tend to imply. I certainly would agree with your pathologist you spoke about earlier today, Dr. Newton, that lo and behold, doing posts, he found a lot of horses that had what appeared to be ulcers, and there was no comment by the people that these horses were having troubles with their stomachs.
Yeah. And moving on, we're talking, there are gastric ulcers, and those are the ones that are in the stomach. And I think there are some intestinal ulcers or something like that that can also happen.
Yeah, you can. We can actually see bleeding in the parts of the colon, right, but obviously we can't scope that far. Even with a 3-meter or 9-foot scope, you can only look so far into the horse's stomach. And you can look into the very early portion of the duodenum and possibly see some constrictures. It is important to realize that in foals, that ulcers are very often life-threatening. And scoping these foals and potentially doing surgery in some cases is life-saving.
What would cause you to look at a foal and even begin to think that this animal has ulcers?
Well, the giveaway is often bruxism. They grind their teeth. You'll watch them, and they'll be grinding back and forth, and you'll just hear the noise. And they've also, again, a general sign, inappetence, not interested in food, not interested in nursing. There are a lot of clinics that if you have a foal come in with his mom, for example, repairing a hernia. That is, that foal is going to be in for more than 24 hours, unless automatically put it on omeprazole and treat it. Just on the basis that ulcers are so common in foals.
Mm-hmm.
But the bruxism, the grinding of the teeth, is a real issue.
Interesting. I would not have guessed. not having had foals around my life ever. Okay. I think we've played with symptoms. If a horse does not have symptoms, how much, if at all, should I worry about whether or not they have ulcers?
I would. This area of asymptomatic, they eat well, bright and alert, you feel like you're doing great on the rides, and I would not worry about the issue of ulcers. This almost, in a sense, reflects like the old EPM issues, equine protozoal myelitis,
mm-hmm.
and that if you go ahead and simply test horses who are seropositive for EPM, you're going to find that a whole bunch of horses, particularly in the South, test positive. But if they're not showing any neurological issues, there's no reason to go ahead and do a spinal tap to look there to make a confirmation. I think if you're asymptomatic, go on. There's other things to be concerned about with any horse that's competing as an endurance horse, shoeing, tack, all sorts of other stuff. I do believe that if they're asymptomatic, there's more to worry about than ulcers at that point.
Yeah. Part of what is so annoying or whatever among those of us who have equine hypochondria is that, okay, you come back from a ride and the horse is back at home and he's not putting his weight back on quite as quickly as you would like. And I know this, I live with an equine hypochondriac. Stag is somewhat self-admitted that way. And we had super scoped for ulcers a few years ago because he wasn't putting his weight back on after a particularly strenuous ride, at least quite as quickly as Stag would like. And his stomach was perfectly clean.
Ah, okay. So that was nice because then you could rule that out as an issue.
Yeah, and I kind of, even at the time, I was, you know, well, putting weight back on. It's midsummer. It's hideously hot. They're not drinking particularly well. They're not eating a whole lot except at night. So he's not putting weight back on. Is this something to worry about? And this is like, okay, he's got one what I would call faint symptom. Do you then worry? And what that taught me is that maybe not. But
if our pocketbooks were big enough, I think almost any heavily competed endurance horse would be on Adequan, and someone would be on Adequan and Legend as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's reasonable to assume that as horses age, and this is similar for people, osteoarthritis becomes more of an issue. The older the horses get, the more likely it is. We can make a good argument with Adequan that it is joint protective. So suddenly now you've come up with an argument with a horse that's asymptomatic to be treated with a drug for a long period of time. And there was a point when I was younger that I used to think, well, shoot, endurance horses ought to be able to do great on grass, hay, grain, and a little bit of electrolytes, and that's it. But I guess with this example of osteoarthritis, because I think we can predict it coming on with the miles, then the use of Adequan, if your pocket's big enough, makes good sense. I'm just not convinced at all that one, gastric ulcers are a major problem in a lot of endurance horses. What you did with Super made a great deal of sense. You checked it out. You ruled it out, and that was terrific. And I'm just a little bit hesitant to put more money in Muriel's back pocket by saying treat most horses with either GastroGuard or UlcerGuard.
Yeah. It's funny. I'm fully with you on that. I know, and I've got to admit, this was AERC convention, I don't know, 15 years ago or something like that. Jeannie Waldron gave a talk about osteoarthritis in horses, among other things. I'm sure there were a lot of other things in the whole talk, but the thing I carried away was we really should have these horses on Adequan. If you expect them to perform year over year at top levels, you know you're going to whack their joints, and you need to get them on joint protection as soon as you can, even before their joints visibly start to deteriorate.
And in my opinion, that's a rational use of a medication to treat a reasonably expected problem to come on. I wouldn't say the situation is similar for UlcerGuard or an omeprazole product and ulcers. I just don't see that same tie.
Right. Strong correlation of deterioration in performance, if you will, that prolonged exposure to the sport almost is a guarantee with arthritis, and at the same time with ulcers, I almost think that the horses that do well in the sport and last in the sport adapt.
I do. And I guess I would make the argument that if you have a horse that is flighty, picky about its eating, gets very nervous at rides, and exposure to rides doesn't correct that, maybe that horse is not cut out to be an endurance horse. Maybe that horse needs to find another way to make a living.
Mm-hmm.
And being good horse people, we should let horses select what they want to do and kind of go along with their notion of what's fun as opposed to superimpose on them what we want them to do all the time.
Rick, what do you think?
Yeah. Makes sense to me.
I'm just trying to put together, you know, where is it that you find out, how do you determine whether a horse thinks something is fun? And even if they do think it's fun, is it something that they can do effectively? I'm trying to get the Rick White questions out here in some senses, because I gather he's got a horse that's, and he couldn't be on the call tonight, I'm sorry.
Well, Rick brought up an interesting issue. In humans, we're able to demonstrate ulcers having a particular bacteria called Helicobacter pylori. And interestingly enough, we are seeing, some people are identifying that in horses as well. When Truman and I wrote this paper, we actually brought that in as kind of an interesting issue that you could see a similar issue going on. But our good internal medicine advisors said that there wasn't a real correlation yet made between the presence of that bug and our bacteria and the disease, and that they would recommend that we not mention it in the article, that it was sort of misnomer. I did find that it was interesting that he wanted to go ahead and treat for that. And certainly, if he's dealing with an internist and they know for sure they have that, then that's that practitioner's choice and that owner's choice. But I would say that that is medicine is kind of on the edge. We don't have enough support that that is an actually disease-causing organism in the horse.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Did you happen to think in terms of getting back to Todd Holbrook about whether or not they looked for any of that at Oklahoma?
You know, that's a very interesting question. I clearly, there's an awful lot that we don't know about.
I know field situations are always very, very difficult.
Yes, yes.
That's why I'm thinking Todd.
Very interesting. And I haven't had a chance to get back to Todd, but it'd certainly be interesting to see what the next steps are on that. And one of the challenges for anybody who's doing endurance riding, particularly in hot, humid conditions, is how to electrolyte these horses. And certainly it's dismaying to find out that someone's done a study suggesting that could be gastric irritating in itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just knowing how I feel about electrolytes, and I had a horse, well, many years ago, that it was very clear he got mouth ulcers from the electrolytes that we were using at that time.
Wow. How much did it take?
This horse required, in order to not dump, a lot of electrolytes. And so we were basically doing probably close to a quarter of a cup of electrolytes at each hold. And that's Duramax. It was not, you know, your garden variety low anything. It was serious high density electrolytes.
Did this horse have any history of being treated previously with oral bute, for example, or oral vanadium?
No. I
okay,
had
so we don't need to worry about that as a contributing cause.
No.
It was, wow.
This was just straight. Over the course of 100 miles, by the end of the ride, you knew he had oral ulcers.
Really?
Yeah.
So at that point, there was no question in your mind why he wouldn't want to, why he'd be more careful.
Why he didn't really want to eat anything, or why he didn't want you near his mouth.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. Anyhow, so it's, and I know most people these days, and I was too stupid at that time, to, pretty much make sure that the horse's mouth is rinsed out after you've dosed with electrolytes and things like that, so that the oral ulcer issue is minimized. But it's we all learn as we go along. Let's put it that way. Okay.
If we talk about what sort of events, if we have events that could cause ulcers in a horse, and they would be identifiable, and I asked this question of Todd Holbrook and a number of the boarded people, I said, how long would it take to affect? To produce these changes. And there were a couple studies. One suggested 5 days, the other suggested, I think, 8 days. And I think that makes me more comfortable about telling people that if you've got a healthy stomach, going without this medication for a couple of days isn't going to be an issue. It becomes more challenging on a multi-day pioneer ride. But theoretically, you ought to be going slower, much slower. The whole notion is that should be less tension for the horse and more eating, more alfalfa, more browsing, and less of a problem.
Yeah, I honestly don't know that the people who do multi-days really go that much slower. It's possible they do. But I also think that the horses, this gets back to choosing your horse right or well.
Yep.
I think the folks that typically do multi-days have horses that are suited for it. In other words, they enjoy the sport, they get into it, and the whole, it's more not so much stress as just raw, hey, we're having a great time together.
Yes.
And ideally, they get enough time between bouts, if you will. They've got at least 12 hours downtime, presumably between when they get in versus when they go out, and probably closer to 16 hours or more when all is said and done. So I don't know that the multi-days are that much more stressful, and if you've got a horse that really, as I say, enjoys the sport, they just motor, if you will. They'll eat when they can. They get very concentrated at the holds, and they chow down, and then they browse on their trails and stuff like that. At least my experience, and Rick, you may or may not have experience this way too, but my horse, when he gets out there these days and gets on trail, and there's an opportunity to grab a bite, and guess what's going to happen?
But you're also saying these horses are showing good appetite for the most part. They're acting like they're happy horses. They're enjoying themselves. They're horses that may be tired at the end of the day, but they represent horses who are clearly not in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
We're not having, as veterinarians, stand scratching our head and saying, this horse is not eating. Why is that? We have a metabolic problem going on. Scratch our head. Do we have an ulcer going on? These horses just look.
Yeah. And I've got to admit, after the Old Dominion this last week or so ago, it was sort of interesting to me. A couple of my horses got to get represented because of poor gut sounds. And I keep wondering, is it fair to ask a horse to have gut sounds when they come into a vet check? They really should have gut sounds before they leave the vet check.
I think physiologically we can answer that question. These horses are out exerting themselves and sending their blood to their muscles and diverting away from the GI tracts. None of us should be surprised that our gastric sounds are slightly depressed.
Mm-hmm.
And is that not, I would argue that's probably normal. In fact,
anything,
you scratch your head when you have those that sound just as good after 30 miles as they did before they started.
Yeah, and that's part of what I was, anyhow, it was a classic case of, you know, well, he just came in from a 20-mile loop and you expect him to have gut sounds? Give me 15 minutes. Then ask him. they always, after they got they represented, the gut sounds were always up and perfectly happy. And it is worrisome when they don't have any, but at the same time, they've been out there working. And how much does it, being out on trail, when they clearly are sloshing all the acid from the bottom part of their stomach up into the top part of their stomach.
We know that anatomically that the upper part of the stomach above the margo placatus, where it's called, the squamous cell is or flat epithelial cell is, has less natural protection, and that's where we most commonly see some of these ulcers, though we will also see it in the glandular part as well. And sure, there's some argument in runners that they are prone to ulcers because they're splashing gastric contents around. Sure, before I forget, let me mention one thing that I think is useful to know. We have a history of fatalities in this sport, and 80% of those associated with endurance rides with the ride itself tend to be metabolic. We have posted a number of horses. We try to post as many as we can. To the best of my knowledge, no post has ever shown a life-threatening ulcer. Where we've had ruptures, it's not been associated with an ulcer. It's been associated with the failure for fluids to go out of the stomach into the duodenum, we've had physiological obstruction. So I think it's reasonable and important to remember that in these horses that we've had catastrophic events, or we've actually posted them, nobody is commenting, nobody, particularly at university hospitals, are saying, well, you've got underlying ulcers here which are causing a problem. Simply has not been noticed or pointed out to us.
Interesting. Has anybody, this is the really dumb question, has anybody really asked the question?
In terms of posting?
Yeah.
Because they will, they will ask that question, because very commonly these horses will rupture their stomach. And when they rupture, they create peritonitis.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, we're on our way to die. And they'll go back and look at the edges of the rupture wound and where it occurs. And it generally occurs along the gastric, what's called the greater curvature of the stomach. So it's very consistent where the pressure would be. So despite the fact that we now have a non-intact stomach, it's not associated with an erosion or an ulcer necessarily. It's associated with dynamic forces.
Okay.
So university posts tend to be pretty darn complete. They would look at that. And as I don't know of anyone who's ever come back to us and said, this horse had a problem with an ulcer.
Okay. Okay. Going back a bit, okay, if I've got a horse that shows some symptoms of ulcers, but independent of whether or not I've actually gotten it confirmed, but I choose to turn the horse out in a field for 6 months, what's the likelihood of the ulcers just disappearing on their own versus requiring them to be treated by?
One of the eye-opening events was the scoping of mares on the pasture who were pregnant or alternatively not pregnant, and then in some instances more than 50% of those horses had ulcers. These horses, you assume, are clinically non-stressed, life is good, they've got their buddies, they're constantly eating. There's no indication that anyone has made that they were showing symptoms of any issue. These were supposedly clinically normal. If you turn this horse out and he does fine, acts fine, then I would make the assumption that you don't have a clinically relevant erosion or ulcer problem going on.
Okay. This goes back to this is normal physiology versus...
It's normal physiology. And I think your response with Super was exactly appropriate. You had a horse that showed non-specific signs. You couldn't attribute to anything else. You went ahead and fasted him, scoped him, and lo and behold, he was clean.
Yeah. It's, okay. So conceivably, yeah, you could go out to any field and conceivably find half the horses have ulcers, even though maybe only 5% of that half show anything as far as clinical signs, and who knows what fraction of them actually do show clinical signs.
Well, and actually, I looked at the study. I have it here in front of me. Pregnant horses, 66% had signs of gastric ulcers. Non-pregnant, 75% had. And these were mares under similar pasture management. I really think a lot of these studies are failing to correlate any clinical conditions, clinical behavioral issues, what they're seeing endoscopically. So we really can't make much sense out of this. It'd be fascinating with these FAI horses who were identified as having ulcers in Europe, if they had done any sort of correlation between the severity of the ulcers and completion rate or the finishing rate.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be very interesting to know. To the best of my knowledge, it simply hasn't been done.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's invented racehorses. So it's curious. The investigators seem to be happy with saying, is it there or not there? But there's nobody trying to relate it to performance.
Mm-hmm. Has anybody done what you might call a longitudinal study about, okay, we've treated them, we know they're gone, do they come back?
Part of the issue that makes that so difficult is the very procedure to go ahead and look at the stomach and do a good endoscopic exam requires fasting. So you've got to pull them off feed. What does that guarantee? Your acidity of the stomach is going to go up. So if you do that enough, we wouldn't be at all surprised to see gastric irritation just from the fact they're off the feed. We haven't come up, in my opinion, with that little capsule we put in there with a scope on it that can essentially capture what's going on in the horse or the zebra out on the normal pasture over a period of time and check it every 12 hours or every 2 hours. Our technique itself that we use to confirm the ulcers may, in fact, produce gastric irritation, which could cause ulcers.
Yeah.
A longitudinal study, like you say, would be terribly interesting. We need to come up with a technique that would allow us to look at that without actually causing problems.
Yeah, I was thinking more in terms of every 3 months or something of that nature.
Oh, you know, and I don't know. That'd be an interesting question to see whether they followed that through, what it would be. I don't know.
It's okay, so we don't have no data on that front. Okay, and then if I've got a horse that's got ulcers, should I be training him?
Well, that becomes an interesting question. And I think that's one that every individual has to decide. Clearly, if you think you've got ulcers and that horse isn't eating well and acting colicky, you need to treat the horse in a fashion that may require backing off your training schedule, changing who that horse's companion is, what they're being fed, the amount of high concentrates that are being fed. You know, I would think that that horse, by showing clinical signs consistent with ulcers and having scope ulcers, is not a very good candidate to train to be a serious endurance horse.
Right.
Now, if you can go ahead and have the money, do a month's worth of omeprazole, horse settles down, does great, eats well, acts normal, can you then go to the ride and compete? Clearly, FEI, you compete and give the ulcer guard through the event. In AARC, you're going to have to withdraw it. If that stomach's halfway healthy, and it should be if you've given enough of the omeprazole, spent that money, then I think you're probably fine pulling them off.
Mm-hmm.
I guess you really have to ask yourself, if you're having recurrent bouts of ulcers in this horse, why is that occurring? There are other diseases other than stress which will occur, and consequently, a better workup, blood work, you know, this then becomes pretty much a diagnostic challenge of why it isn't clearing up, given doing the other things right.
Mm-hmm. I, at least this is an anecdote. I don't know if you know Dinah Rojack at all.
I know her a little bit.
Yeah, anyhow, she at one point had a horse that she had high hopes for on endurance, and the horse had persistent ulcers. They kept trying the omeprazole route to get rid of them, and they just come back. And the horse got stressed out at rides and just could not perform, practically speaking, or begin to meet the potential that she had for him. So they basically, you know, this is not a good candidate for the sport, was the conclusion. And they retired him from the sport, and presumably he went on to doing other things. But I think that's one of those hard choices that occasionally you have to make.
But I think it underlines being a smart equestrian when you can recognize that some horses' mental attitude isn't right for the sport that you want them to do, and it isn't, you know, it isn't fun to force them into a mold that inherently they're uncomfortable with.
Yeah. That's always a hard choice, though. Like, they have talents on, you know, you kind of look at the profile. They've got this, that, and the other attribute, and they just don't have, in some senses, their physiology and or their head doesn't work. And that's a really hard conclusion to draw, especially with young horses. Because none of their heads are right when they're young. Rick, do you have any other questions?
Going back to electrolyting, you know, the French say we over-electrolyte like that ride. I'm wondering if we're causing some of the problem of over-electrolyting and causing ulcers.
Yes. We were lucky to have Joe Pagan come to this year's AARC convention, which dealt a lot with hydration, electrolytes during rides. And people were talking at great length about different formulations they would have and give to the horse. And he was very good about pointing out that in your forage, what you're giving can be high in potassium or low in potassium, that in fact a lot of these electrolytes can be just in the hay if you go ahead and do that correctly. Ultimately, what a horse needs is so individualized that it's hard to give good advice. We know that hot temperatures, humid temperatures, we likely will need more of it. Clearly, there's discussion about the French being able to supposedly go without electrolytes. I guess we asked that question at the AARC conference, that if did anybody know the specifics of that and how it all worked, and no one knew enough details to kind of confirm that. It's interesting that Cheryl told us how she was able to create oral ulcers during a ride with giving too much electrolytes. Clearly some of the work done at Tevis suggests blood work that they will do on their horses, completers and non-completers, suggests that we're potentially giving too much electrolytes to these horses who were seeing abnormalities we didn't see 4 or 5 years ago. So this whole issue about how much is enough and how much is too much is very challenging, to be honest.
Any insights on how to go about resolving, at least in individual cases, or globally, I don't care, what would be a rational electrolyte approach, something that would at least keep you within a degree of logic?
Well, and Cheryl, that's a challenging question to ask me. I haven't done an endurance ride in 25 years. So my hands-on experience is pretty minimal. I do like the classic advice that Hal Schott has given. Half light salt, half regular salt, and about 60 cc's of that, or 2 ounces, every hour, as being kind of a middle ground that I would think would be adequate for most horses. Clearly, this is one of those situations where the rider, you know, you're going to be fine-tuning what you think this horse needs. And not only is that horse an individual, what's the temperature of the day? How much humidity during the time? I mean, I think ultimately you're out there doing an experiment of one, seeing what you think makes that horse do the best, stay the brightest, and continue on to eat and drink.
And we all know how good the validity of an experiment of one is.
Hopefully, this 100-mile questionnaire that I've been encouraging people to do will give us data into this, because we're going to get some information as to what was given during the ride, plus what was done at Biltmore in terms of blood work that was pulled on these horses at various times. We may be able to do some good correlations and get a much better appreciation. At this point in time, there's some general rule of thumb, and I guess I really like the light salt and the regular salt equal mixtures. But I know that that may not be adequate for some horses and need to be fine-tuned. I'm hoping we get some data that helps us make better sense of this.
Yeah. I maybe this on for size, the equal parts light and regular salt, and then throw on some alfalfa hay for some calcium.
Okay.
Right.
And are you pretty pleased with that?
I've not done this.
Okay.
But at the same time, this reverts back to my horse that got the mouth ulcers. He was a thumper. And the only way I could manage his thumping was to electrolyte him heavily so that he got a good bit of calcium.
Okay.
He could not have alfalfa basically between races.
Okay.
So his system actually developed the ability to really process his own calcium effectively.
Did you, there is Calfos, comes in a bottle. We can run it into horses with a tube. We can also give it orally. Did you ever try?
I never did.
That would have,
I mean, this was over 20 years ago.
Wow, okay.
And it was, he taught me a lot about electrolytes, a whole lot. And at the same time, it's the one life lesson that came out of it is it's very, very individual. This gets back to your experiment of one. I fully agree.
Yeah. What did you do at the Old Dominion this year?
The Old Dominion this year, pretty much before the ride, we actually even before leaving home, because we knew it was going to be a really awful humidity experience trailering, we electrolyted them. We virtually never ever do this, but we electrolyted them the day before we left to make sure that they drank the night before.
And you used a commercial electrolyte?
Yeah, I think we used the Light Nows, not the Light Nows, no, the Performan Win to do that. And then when we got to the ride, we basically did the same thing again that night. Performan Win is pretty easy to get them to even eat if you top dress it on top of their food. We had gotten through Trish Dowling some Northern Lights electrolytes.
Yes.
Which are a little bit different than a lot of the commercial stuff you can get in this country, in that they have, rather than dextrose or sucrose or sugary types of things, they have maltose. So they've got, in effect, a malt taste, and the horses tend to tolerate them real well. And at the same time, they've got the same electrolyte concentration that Enduramax does. So you can, in one scoop, get a full dose of electrolytes and basically get get it down the horse's hatch pretty readily.
So you cheated?
Objecting violently to it.
Before you left North Carolina,
mm-hmm.
you treated the night before. How about during the ride?
During the ride, they got at each check, or rather, before we started, the night before, they got the Northern Lights scoop. Morning of Northern Lights scoop. Each checkpoint, a scoop of Northern Lights, except for the last check, which I'll get to in a moment. On trail, if we were on trail, the first one to basically the first, like, three legs on trail, we were doing light nows. One dose of light nows on trail, midway on the legs. And then the fourth leg was 8 miles. That took us about an hour. We didn't do anything on trail. The next leg, we did a light now on trail. And at the last checkpoint, vet check, we did a light now. And then the last 6 miles into camp, we didn't do anything.
Okay. Did you treat all three horses the same way?
Yes.
Okay. My memory is that you finished well, showed well, everybody looked great?
Yes.
Very good. If it had been hotter, would you have given more?
I don't think so. I think, if anything, we possibly overdid it a little bit, but not by much. And the horses were eating well, they were drinking well, and I have a certain amount of faith that if it had been a lot hotter, you know, if it were like in the 90s, which it wasn't, fortunately, it was a very nice day that day, but if we had gotten into heat and humidity, like 90-plus degree heat and humidity way up there, too, we may well have, at some of the checks, increased the amount of electrolytes.
And nobody had sores in their mouth at the end?
No.
Okay.
Everybody.
Well, here's your experiment of one multiplied by three.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I don't know any other way of doing it other than what you just did in terms of knowing your horses, training with them, giving them electrolytes, and this is a successful ride in a very difficult circumstance.
Yeah. And I know at Biltmore we did, I think, something fairly similar. The classic thing of being the ride manager at Biltmore is I wasn't, you know, hands-on with the horses, and I didn't know quite as well what was happening with them. It was in the hands of other people. But I think they were intending to do the same thing. And Biltmore, for my guys, was a pretty successful ride, too. But at the same time, it's... Rick, what do you do at rides?
The past perform and win is primarily what I've used. I did have one horse he colleagued so many times on me that some friends suggested they call Jim Hefner at Advanced Biasal Concepts, and he suggested their product Ions.
Could you
for
spell
this
that?
Horse. Huh?
Could you spell that?
Ions? I-O-N-S.
I-O-N-S?
Yeah.
Heard of it. Okay.
Well, anyway, he claimed that the well water, you get too much calcium chloride and it causes an imbalance. And once I put this horse on these ions, I never had another problem with it.
Wow.
But that's the only horse I ever had a problem with. And like that, and I asked him, well, why this horse? He said, like you. Saying it individual, for some reason he was more sensitive.
Yeah.
something like that. At least with this horse, it worked.
Yeah, interesting. I know that the findings, how the calcium is presented in the electrolytes evidently makes a big difference in how well the horse uses it. And this is way back when, things that you, in retrospect, you probably shouldn't have done, but we did. We used calcium carbonate.
Yes.
For a while. And that was, that's not the right binding. Let's put it that way. Anyhow.
So, Cheryl, do you have any information on the French horses who are, again, rumored to be doing strenuous rides without electrolytes?
I have no facts. And the rumor mill that I have heard is that they use an isotonic solution of electrolytes and the horses drink it.
Uh-huh.
As a matter of course.
So it's literally mixed almost with the water.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's what they drink, and so they don't. It all sort of flows with their system. Part of what gets interesting in some of the faster races if you can manage to get through your loops in like an hour and a quarter or thereabouts on trail, and you're back in camp, you don't need to stop for drinking on trail. All the drinking can be done back in camp. And you can control what it is that horse is given to drink.
Mm. Okay.
Now, that's all well and good for flat, fast horses in some senses. Flat, fast courses, rather. It gets far more problematical when you've got a course, as I understand it, the European Championship this year is going to be in France at a place called Florac, which evidently is one of the more challenging and technical courses that exists in Europe. And has serious challenges as far as footing and everything else. And the likelihood of horses being able to sustain speed of the nature where they can only drink at the checkpoints is pretty minimal, as I understand it. And this is in France, and you've got to think, okay, the French are going to set this up so that they can probably have a bit of an edge. After all, they do want to have a home course advantage. Otherwise, why have
sure.
it? And so I'm not particularly happy with what I've just said about, okay, fine, they're only going to be drinking when they get back to the checkpoints. And they can only electrolyte back at the checkpoint. Something is wrong with this picture. So I don't have a complete story, no.
Well, I think the issue, clearly the difference between FEI and AARC is the use of products like omeprazole during the ride itself. And ultimately, it seems to me this is sort of a philosophical decision that the AARC organization made in saying that they wanted horses to compete as naturally as they could. And this is where, in the past, a line has been drawn. Additionally, we don't really know about the long-term effects. I mean, those are concerning of omeprazole, though clearly if all you're asking is people not to use that during that 24 hours for the ride and they use it on both sides of it, you're pretty much doing it full-time anyway. But I think it is a decision by the sport as to what level of chemical support do you want to have for horses that are competing?
Yeah, in my books, the AERC rule is basically, okay, we're going to have we're going to ensure that there, or ask more accurately, that riders / owners, responsible people, allow that window at race day. Outside that window, you can do whatever you darn well please to manage the health of your horse. And then it's a question of what is best management for your horse.
And I guess my response,
develop ulcers, you know, 5 to 8 days or something like that to develop ulcers under stress circumstances. Okay, so they've got none, and they're off the drug for, like, say, 48 hours. Of course, of a 100-mile ride plus 24, a few hours beforehand or something like that. They're not going to be developing ulcers in that period of time, per se.
I think our science is very good about that. And if you as a rider would come to me and say, gosh, I need to be able to treat this horse halfway through, I would say you have a sick horse.
Yeah.
That horse should not be competing.
Yeah, exactly.
That would be my response from what I know now.
Yeah, exactly. I kind of look at it and say that there's, if your horse requires that level of support, there's something definitely screwed up. If you can afford, that's the other thing, is if you can afford to keep your horse treated like that, you've got pretty deep pockets, and I actually think very seriously about looking for a different horse.
I think that's very reasonable to consider. It is interesting looking at FEI horses or FEI races in Europe and what happens to the horses there versus AERC. There was a paper that came out last fall that talked about fractures. One in every 300 horses would have a fetlock fracture, or a fracture in the lower leg. They weren't necessarily catastrophic where these horses had to be euthanized. I was lucky enough to do some work on thoroughbred tracks as a researcher and look at catastrophic breakdown associated with shoeing issues, and hence had a pretty good idea about what sort of numbers of horses broke down anyway. What surprises me is that if we look at the AERC, the number of catastrophic injuries or fractures of the fetlock that we can identify out of 175,000 starts over 9 years is 2 or 3. And most of them, horses are sticking their foot in holes. For European endurance horses to be having fractures at a rate of 1 per 300, I find astonishing. We're looking at rates that are similar to thoroughbred racehorses, and you have to scratch your head. Are we looking at two? These horses are clearly being trained differently. They're going faster, but I wouldn't think they're being trained to go at the speed of sprinting all the time. Maybe this reflects the fact that I don't understand or haven't been around what they're doing in Europe, but I do find it very interesting that we have such a difference in the fracture rates. I also wonder, too, how much these horses are getting in terms of Mifepristone.
I was just thinking, we've been speculating that the calcium and magnesium uptake might
be compromised, and I have absolutely no information to say that that's the case. But it is an intriguing question, because why are these horses experiencing fractures at a much higher rate than we see in AERC? Is it simply enough to say that they're being trained different and they're going faster, or is there something else going on too? And I honestly, I don't know.
Wow. Rick, do you have any other questions?
No, I can't think of anything right now.
Oh, very provocative, though. Owen, I think we've covered everything that I thought of covering. Anything else that you want to throw on the table?
Cheryl, you've done a fine job of keeping the conversation going and walking our way through this. I think the little paragraph that Trish Dowling put together, I have an immense amount of respect for her as being a fine horsewoman, excellent pharmacologist, and a board internist, summarizes this whole issue pretty well. I think, honestly, the issue of gastric ulcers is overblown. And unless there are clinical signs, I would go on and look for other issues.
Yeah. We got it.
All right.
For those of us who have nice, healthy horses that can do the sport and seemingly without any issues, I think that's obviously a slam dunk. I hope that those folks who do have horses that have issues stand back 5 paces and look at them again. Figure out how much of them are, whether ulcers really are the end, or just a part of the overall picture. Isn't that a nice non-statement? Anyhow, thank you again very, very much. It's been a very interesting conversation.
Thank you very kindly. Rick, hopefully I'll have a chance to run into you at a ride sometime in the future.
Yeah, I hope so. It'd be nice.
I hope the weather stays nice, and we have a wonderful... Gas prices drop down by about $2 or $3, so we all go to more rides.
Oh, wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay. Thank you again very much, Owen.
You bet, Cheryl. You have a great day.
Have a good day.
Thank you, Rick. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Rick.
Mm-hmm.